Poetry will never hurt more than what has happened. You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today we're talking about a new book from University of Minnesota Press. It's called The Home of the Drowned. Now, the author is a Sami journalist named Aylin Analaba. Her first book, The Rocks Will Echo Our Sorrow, The Forced Displacement of the Sami People, won the 2020 August Prize for Nonfiction in Sweden. This new book is a novel, and it's a multi-generational story of three women. Their land is flooded again and again by a dam built to supply hydropower to a society that doesn't understand nor welcome Sami people. It's a story of colonization, of family, of resistance, and of what it means to make a home. I spoke with the author from her home in Norway.
Well, I actually thought that I was going to write a nonfiction book, that this was going to be like my first book, like The Rocks Will Echo Our Sorrow. But it ended up to be a novel. And I think I was working so many years with the first book. I was working like 7 years just to gather. It's not really a big book, the first one. So I knew that to make that kind of history book was like that was a big job, because the Sami history and the indigenous history it's not in the archives. It's not like in the official Swedish or Norwegian or in the Nordic history at all. So you have to be, there are like not a lot of books or documents or anything. So you have to go to people, and you have to actually go home to people and tape, and it's like an oral history telling. So in this book, it was, I had a lot of those of interviews that I had been doing, but I also had my own memories, as I had been living in a place just like this, by a lake, just like in the book. And that was like my childhood and my grown-up life as well. So I had the feeling that this book could become something else with all my own memories and with all the interviews that I had been doing. So I'm a bit curious, could I write a novel? Was it possible to do that? And what would that be? And I've been raised in this very big storytelling tradition, the Sami storytelling tradition, which is beautiful. And the elder people teaching me a lot about it. So I was a bit curious if I could like take all those stories that they had been giving me and make something out of it on my own.
When you say you grew up in a storytelling culture, does that mean people were telling you stories as a child? Like you were always surrounded by stories? Like what does that mean for you? What was your childhood like when it comes to story and language?
It wasn't like around the fire. Oh yeah, there was that as well. But it could be like very like ordinary, just by the table when you have dinner. And I think I realized that when I became older, that I actually had that, because you have the feeling that a storytelling tradition is something you can see, like people sitting around a fire and talking, and you don't really realize that those stories that you have like in your everyday life actually is a part of that tradition. So, but people are, and I think it's because we don't have those big libraries, and it's a very indigenous culture in that sense, that we don't have those national libraries and everything that maybe you have. If you're a Swede, you have all your history, like from the beginning to the end, like written down. And the Sami history is like told from one person to another, and it's not just a history, but tales and myths and songs and everyday life, and a lot of like local stories that are just about the village where you live and the people that have been living there. And you realize that quite quickly, that people are really, really good at doing it and telling stories when you travel around, as I have been doing. So it's like it's a pleasure to be a journalist in Sápmi. It's really, it often feels like a big honor, actually.
Is there a sense of urgency to it as well?
Yeah, really. Which became very obvious during the pandemics when people are old, and as stories are not always recorded and written, I often feel that sometimes there are just like some people having the story that you are longing for. So you have the feeling that you have to ask them before it's too late. So yeah, it's always an urgency, and I guess it always will be, because we will never be like quick enough to gather our stories. So I have the feeling you will always be kind of losing a lot, but also being very grateful for the stories that you actually get to know.
So much of this book is about the relationship between women, mother, daughter, aunt. The men are very important too, but the core characters are these women and their relationships, which are complex. And at the same time, it struck me that they're living through these huge shifting times as they're forced relocation and hydropower is coming in, the lake is rising. They're trying to figure out ways to think about home and what home is and to create home and carve out something. And yet they're also just women living, mother, daughter, aunt, child, living a normal life, doing the laundry. Talk about the domestic relationships that are happening in this large global geopolitical shift that's happening. It's beautifully done. How did you think about that when you were writing it?
I just wanted to be like inside this village and this family, and with all their fishing and their reindeer herders, as is my family has always been. But that is not like they're mainly actually living by fishing and doing handicraft and sewing. And I wanted it to be like they really very close to their small life, and at the same time, and the contrast between that, and you have this big politics like coming in from the air, almost like dropping in on them in letters and like decisions that is like really, really far away from them. This feeling that you in this everyday life, you get these like decisions and this policy making that is like absolutely destroying your life, and that is like very far from you all the time, because that's the feeling that you have inside me, that people have been removed and have been like losing, well, children have been put into boarding schools, and I guess history is quite the same as it has been in many other countries, and everything is like happening above you, and this really, really beautiful life that is very traditional, but it's also in this time. I like it because it's in the 40s and the 50s where the book starts. It's also changing a lot. So you have this like kind of Nordic, Western, modern life coming into, and people really longing for that and wanting that, because people often do. If you can make life easier, you often want to do that. But you have also the Swedish government wanting the Sami people to be like the wild ones and the living like traditionally, and people in the village like longing for some kind of how to say, to have the rights and the possibilities that other people have. So I don't know, I actually been it's nice because in some parts things haven't been changing a lot, so I could actually go back to my own childhood and to the shine of my kids, and we are still doing a lot of the same things as it did in the 40s. So in that sense, it wasn't very hard to write that kind of everyday life, because it's in many ways it's still the same.
There's a scene for people who haven't read the book when the company comes to the village to give a presentation, and one of the characters turns his cap inside out so that the company people can't see the full beauty of the handwork, the sewing, the decoration. They don't deserve to see that. There are ways throughout this book, through singing, prayer, physical presence, that people show protest, that people show resistance. Talk a little bit about about how that shows up in Sami culture, this resisting of a company or a governmental push.
Well, that is still the case. You can see, actually, if you look on pictures from like nowadays demonstrations on Sami land, or like if you go, you can see that people have been turning their clothes inside out. So that is like a very young people do that still. So it's like been a very old way of showing that I'm not okay with this, and you, well, showing your demonstrating actually. And often, like, we haven't really been good at demonstrating and saying no. So it's always made, not always, but often at least very discreet. Maybe sometimes too discreet that people even can't even see that you're actually against something. So they have this really small ways of saying no and showing that you have to be like having really, really good eyes to see. And I find that really interesting, this this way of making protests without these big movements, and without I'm not really good at describing this in English, but it's a very, very typical Sami way of, we often say that we actually don't have the word no, that we're very bad at the word no. It hasn't been really good for us.
How do you say the main character's name? Is it Ravna?
Ravna. And it comes from the word for stream, which is Raunje in Sami language. So like a river that is like streaming a lot. So she's like that kind of river.
I love her. I think she's one of the great characters that I have read in an incredibly long time. Thank you for introducing me to her.
She's angry. Yeah.
She's brave. I when I read her, I thought she's so brave and angry.
Yeah, she's actually based on my great grandmother. Her name was Risten. I never met her, but I've been hearing about her. And that was great with the novel, because I could, it was like I got a chance to imagine her life and those parts that I didn't know about. So that's like, that's where she came from.
The lake has a voice as well, as it grows and relates to the people. How did you as a writer think about, how do I write that? Was that a very simple thing for you to do, or was that challenging?
No, it wasn't simple. Those are actually the texts that I wrote in the end, and that I really struggle. And they have been changing a lot. In the beginning, they were like a Sami song, like a joik, like more like poems. And then they became like long histories, and then they became shorter. I really tried to find that voice. But I knew that it had to be some kind of voice, because the lake where I have been growing up is, it's like really have a loud voice. It's like it gets really, it's a big temperament and gets angry with big bass very quickly, and then suddenly very calm. So it has this kind of temperament. So I wanted it to be like, well, the place where I grew up. And at the same time, I mean, with nature can also have, when you, it could also, it was like also possible to give it like a long perspective, because the lake had been there for a really long time. But you can also imagine that the lake have some kind of ability to watch, to see the future that we can't. So you can have like, you can like stretch out time when you have like nature talking and telling.
There's a sense, as the government comes in and the company is talking about how the Sami people should be proud to be part of this great collective advancement, this improvement, and that the lake belongs not to them, the mountains belong not to them, but to everyone. And the line is, the lake belongs to the lake. You know, nature belongs to itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that resonates in the era of climate change that we're in right now, as we look at how Indigenous people have traditionally stewarded land or walked alongside land or had a relationship with land, versus the impact of some of the industrial revolution impacts that we're seeing right now. talk about the future then, and whether some of these stories and this knowledge, how important is it going forward for humanity, for the planet?
I was writing this book with, it was that like the first years we were reindeer herders in my family, and reindeer herding is actually is a nomadic way of life, and we have our animals. They are, well, I say ours, but they're not like ours. In some languages say this, like they actually belong to the winds, but you take care of them. So we have them out in the wild and in the mountains and in the forest. But for the last years, because of climate change, we have been forced to feed them wintertime because they can't find food anymore. So it's been like a very, very drastic, big, brutal change in our lives. And I was writing in the same time that this happened, like for the first winter. So it was kind of, it was really a sad year. So I think that was like, that made something for the book, and I think it made it a bit more full of sorrow than it was actually, than I had thought that it would be, because as I was writing those years. It's like the biggest question of life, and I think in many Arctic areas you can already feel that, because it's already happening, and it's happening really quickly. So you have, instead of snow in winter, you have rain, which is like... changing everything, the clothes you're wearing and the animals that you're working with and living with and the way you are living, like in your houses. And it's like, it's so brutal and drastic what's happening right now. So I think people have already changed their way of life and have already been making all those small changes that you have to do, like, and I feel that it's like now in the Western society, you can sometimes hear that it's like really... you can't do it, like it's so like we can't change it, you can't like so quickly like change your way of life. But actually I have a lot of people around me that already have been doing that. So just like you can watch how people have been living like historically, but you can also watch like how people have been like already adapting their way of life this now, so you can actually have a lot of examples of how to do it. And in the same time, I think it's, I actually think that I come from a place that we are able to adapt ourselves, and we will have food and we will find it some way, because we have actually been adapting our society in front of colonialism and really brutal industrialization for such a long time. So people are really, really, how to say, have the knowledge of that. But there are a lot of areas in the world and where climate change will be really, really devastating for people. So I think when it comes to this, I'm much more worried about countries where they're closer to the sea and like even more, how to say, where the struck will be even bigger than for our community. So it's like a very big and global sorrow that people are carrying around.
Yeah. When you look to the future, where do you see the people who are doing things that are already working and already making positive change?
Well, women have. For a very long time, so that's why it's a book about women, because in our community they've always been like in the somehow leading that kind of movement, and also the book is dedicated to the young people that we have now that are actually out. Like I was feeling like a bit lousy when I was writing, because I was sitting home writing, and as a writer you often do, but when people are actually out making being on the barricades and like making change for real. So, and in the book, in the end, it actually, it's not like a really, really, really bright story, but in the end, they start to like have the self-esteem and the self to actually be saying that maybe we don't have to take this, and maybe we can do it in another way, and you can see like another time coming. So yeah, we have to hope that time is coming and that we have to do it. We have to be like Ravna.
Yeah.
In the stream that doesn't stop.
Yeah. Maybe I'll be. Would you? We. I don't know that we've ever had Sami language. We've had Lakota. We've had people speak Lakota or read in Lakota. Could you read something from the book or speak in your language, the original language of this text, for our listeners, even though we won't understand exactly what you're saying? Is there something that might fit into that request?
Yeah. So it's written in Swedish, but with Sami words and Sami expressions, and with and it has been translated to Sami. This is not my own text. I wish it would be, but it's not. So it's a translation. I can read the lake in Sami
I would
if you
love
want.
that. Yes, thank you.
Muslim namma manin muhte. Muhtu le ähpetielekasa, enas fuutju. Muhtu mi kuuttu i kierragi. Letin tjualmi ja kätti, kortti ja luofta. Mus letti kuoli, tähti lotti, ta letti ein. Letin jauri, mas letin naama ja luodi, takki orru täppi juikimu. Nana, muistan sin juikinu. Nana houdaltaan, tali houdan, nashottai. Litsen kietsä jauri, ku tjähpis piktasa pohte mu tjäätä milde. Teute muu ja kurreje ja teude. Välte muu. Ja hin mähtän, ku seuhkali. Siivuus mu piuhtan, äätmi ehkä muu. Tuotta joka tarvanetse. Pähkus tjipnjöretse muu, saden merran ja kortti ei kulluansa. Mun tulevan ja pääru loktanetse.
Thank you so much. I love the book. Beautifully done. Thank you for sharing it with the world. Really. You can write a novel. It turns out.
Thank you.
Eilean Anilaba's latest book is called The Home of the Drowned. It's available now from University of Minnesota Press. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.